This is the Indie Drills Podcast, and I'm your host, Chad Wilson. I'm also the owner of All Eyes DB Camp and author of 101 DB Tips. In this podcast, we're going to be talking about any and everything having to do with defensive back play. From technique to current events, we'll cover it all just like the guys in the back half blanket the wide receivers. I have over 20 years playing and coaching and training in this game, and I'm ready to use all of that experience to bring you the best experience in the Indie Drills Podcast. So let's go. Listeners, if you haven't had a chance to do it yet, pick up your copy of the 101 DB Tips ebook. It's the ultimate reference guide for defensive back play. If you're a player, a coach, or a trainer of defensive backs, then this is something you absolutely have to have in your library. I discuss everything in this book, from playing man-to-man coverage, to zone coverage, to how to train, to how to improve your footwork, your eye discipline, and body control. Literally everything pertaining to defensive back is covered in this book. Over 20 years of playing, coaching, and training defensive backs has gone into the making of this ebook, and I'm proud to say that it has helped players and coaches from the little leagues all the way to the college level. Make a point to check this book out now. If you're serious about being the best at what you do, make that purchase. You can find the book by going to 101dbtips.com. That's 101dbtips.com. Welcome to the Indie Drills Podcast, episode number 6. I would like to thank you all for joining me, and if you've been a regular listener, I super appreciate you. I'm very thankful for the way things are going with this. I had a sneaky suspicion that there would be a lot of interest in defensive backs and defense, because it's been all about offense up to this point. With a lot of what goes on in the media, podcasts, etc., I guess more people find what's happening on that side of the ball to be interesting. Plays being run, quarterbacks throwing the balls to wide receivers, etc., etc. But if you're a true observer of the game, and of course if you're playing on this side of the ball, you recognize the defense wins championships. And in this day and age where they're throwing the ball more, defensive backs have become more and more important in this game. And so I'm happy to be hosting the Indie Drills Podcast, where we talk about DB play. It's a DB podcast, and we're going to jump into some things today. The main topic today, 3 things DBs must remember while in the game. This is something I'm speaking to you from experience, both as a player as well as a coach. So I'm looking forward to getting to that. That's our main topic coming at the bottom of the show. But before we get there, we've got to jump into some other things that are out there in the DB land. Before that, I appreciate you guys for joining me here. If it's your first time here, or you've been coming for a while and you've neglected to do so, go ahead and hit the subscribe button on whatever platform you're listening to us on. By the way, I got this email, the other day from Amazon Podcast, and they're telling me I'm ranking top 100 in Germany and Canada. So to all my listeners right now listening from either Germany or Canada, I greatly appreciate you being a part of getting me into that top 100 in your area. Who knew football's big in Germany like that? It has to be big if you're listening to a DB podcast. And of course, we know here in the States that you've got football in Canada. There's a whole Canadian league that hosts and takes on a lot of the American players each and every year onto their roster. So no surprise there that there's some juice and interest for football in Canada. But folks in Canada and Germany, greatly appreciate you listening enough to put me in your top 100. I appreciate all the listeners, wherever you may be coming from, China, Japan. Football's international now. I'm finding that out more and more each and every day. So wherever you're listening to me from, I appreciate you being here. Go ahead and hit the subscribe button. And of course, if you guys are trying to take your game to the elite level, go ahead and grab that book. 101 DB Tips, a great ebook covering just about everything in playing this game. Man coverage, zone coverage, playing safety, playing nickelback, playing cornerback, how to train, how to coach, everything that you need in there. Technique, the whole nine. 20-plus years of experience put into that book, so you guys should pick up a copy, 101dbtips.com. All right, let's get into it. Hey, there's a big thing that comes out every year. It's a, you know, I'll reserve really my feelings for this. I'm a guy who played Madden when it first came out. All right, so I'm dating myself, but Madden came out while I was entering college. It was a big thing for us to be playing Madden in the dorms and going against each other. It was a really simple game back then. Simple, but more graphically pleasing, I would say, than anything else that was out at the time. That's really what grabbed the interest of many, many people, including, you know, myself and my teammates that would get together and play there, the realism. And it's just so amazing to see what it has developed into from those early years in the 90s that the game started off and to what it is now. It's just as real as it can get, I suppose. Maybe we'll find out into the future that it can get even more real. But it's gotten more and more real and popular. And with that popularity, there now starts to be agendas and angles and money gets involved. And so the realism I'm talking about is on the actual field of play, the graphics and things of that nature, and just trying to give you an accurate look at the gameplay situation. But I'm not so sure now that we've jumped into things like Madden ratings and, you know, how good or not so good a player is on the game. I'm not so sure they're real in that sense anymore, because now they have to give way to interest. They need to play to the hand of those that are going to be more popular, make them better, because that's going to sell more games, bring more money. I get the whole thing. Nevertheless, forget about my personal feelings on that. Madden just came out with their ratings on all of the players, and I wanted to talk about who Madden says are the top defensive backs, the top cornerbacks specifically. Not going to get into the safeties on this particular show, but I'm going to talk about the cornerbacks. And according to Madden, and, if you don't play Madden and you don't know that there's a rating, it's 1 to 100. Players don't really get 100. Okay, if you hit 99, if you're in the 90s, you're doing well. You're doing really, really well. And if you hit 99, then you're considered one of the best, if not the best player on the whole game. So the number one player, according to Madden, who came out with their ratings 2 days ago, is Jalen Ramsey, who's now a Miami Dolphin. They have him at 97. Number two is Jaire Alexander, who plays for the Packers. He's 95. Pat Surtain, too, is at number three. He's rated number 94. Very happy for Pat. For those of you who don't know, coached him in high school, coached with his dad, who was the head coach, and continue to train him to this day and age. Great to see what he's become. Not really surprised, though. You can always tell that this kid was the prototype, and, you know, barring any injury, he was going to be right where he is right now, because had all the physical skills, know-how, the pedigree, and the work ethic. That's an important part of it, so happy to see him there. Number four, Sauce Gardner. He's in at number four. He's 93 ranked. You all know he's from the Jets. Marlon Humphrey, number five at 93. Plays with the Ravens. Number six, that is Darius Slay, coming in with a 92, plays for the Eagles. Stephon Gilmore, number seven for the Cowboys. He's at a 91. Marshawn Lattimore, 8, 90. Tre'Davious White at 90. He's number nine. And number 10 is Denzel Ward, with 88. Now, listen, the offseason's getting long, because I've seen about 10 different top cornerback lists, whether it comes from PFF or Sports Illustrated or ESPN or Madden, and none of them have had the same top guy. None of them have had the same top three. Fellas, it's time to get into the actual playing of the games. I'm tired of lists. And I believe it was Sauce Gardner the other day was on the pivot talking about, I really hate to be compared to those other guys, because there's room for all of us to be great. And when you get into these debates on Twitter, when fans get into these debates on Twitter, for them to pub up their guy, everyone has their guy that they like, right? They may be hardcore fans of a team, and whatever top cornerback plays for their team, they're going to say that that guy is the best. And there's no non-bias in that. If I'm a New York Jet fan and I've got Sauce Gardner playing on my team, Sauce Gardner is the best cornerback in the league. If I'm a Denver Broncos fan and I've got Pat Surtain playing corner on my team, Pat Surtain's the best corner in the league. if I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan and Trayvon Diggs is playing on my team, Trayvon Diggs is the best corner in the league. And that's simply just the way that it goes. And I think the NFL would have it no other way. They want discussion about their game. They want fans going back and forth. They want the heated arguments on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere else. And as a result, we've got all kind of lists coming out. And this guy's the number one. No, this guy's the number one. No, that guy's the number one. Quite frankly, I'm over all of the lists. But I know you guys are interested, some of you out there, in this kind of stuff. And so that's their top 10. Jalen Ramsey, Jair Alexander, Pat Surtain II, Sauce Gardner, Marlon Humphrey, Darius Slay Jr., Stephon Gilmore, Marshawn Lattimore, Tre'Davious White, Denzel Ward. I didn't name a guy in there that's not a certified baller in this league. But there's just so many guys playing well in the NFL at the cornerback position right now. A tremendous amount of guys playing well. So it gets difficult to be able to say, one guy over another. Or saying this guy is absolutely the best, hands down. I hear this saying that fans like to have. So-and-so is number one and it's not even close. Okay, if you're talking about cornerbacks in this league, there's no one that's head and shoulders runaway the best. There isn't. There's a group at the top and there's a lot of guys playing well. If you listen to last week's show, I threw some names out there that maybe guys weren't thinking about, but there are an awful lot of guys playing well. I do get the feeling, though, with this Madden list, that they've given a little more push to guys who have done it for a good amount of time. I'm saying that, and they have Sauce Gardner at number four. But outside of Sauce Gardner, and of course, when you've got a New York Jet player that's doing well, it's in your best interest to throw some pub that way, because that New York market is big. And not only are they big, they spend money, so you better keep those folks happy. But outside of that, it looks like they give a little more kudos to guys who've been doing it for a little bit of amount of time there. All right. Let's talk about the speed ratings. All right. The speed ratings also come out, because when they come out with those ratings, there's different attributes for each player on Madden. And one of those big things that they rate are the speed. So the number one guy in the league, and rightfully so, is Tariq Woolen, coming in with a 98. If you saw him play last year, his closing speed, his ability to run down plays, come from the other side of the field. And, of course, we all know what he did at the combine. This is a guy who was running 4.2s at the combine. He is number one with the 98. DJ Turner, a guy who ran a 4.25, I believe, at the combine, drafted by the Bengals. He's a rookie, comes in number two at 97. Ja'Corian Bennett, another guy that is a rookie that ran really well, a 4.3 flat, I think, 4.31 at the combine. By the way, combine times have been getting lower and lower and lower and lower. Now guys will say, well, so-and-so only ran a 4.4. If you guys notice that, like 4.4 speed is starting to become average and pedestrian these days. But anyway, Ja'Corian Bennett, number three. Javelin Guidry, a guy who ran a 4.2 when he was coming out, former LSU guy, still with the Jets or back with the Jets, has a 96. Kalen Barnes, who's with the Vikings, didn't play much last year, pretty much a special teams player, but he was another guy in the 4.2 range. I want to say he was a 4.23 guy, low 40 time. All about that speed. He was in there. He's in there at number five at 96. And this guy, aptly named Amir Speed, is your number six guy at 95. Don't want to go through all this, but also on the list is Farley, Dante Jackson, Eric Stokes, Isaiah Bolden. Are there some guys missing on this list? Certainly. But, you know, again, it is what it is. No one I named on here, though, is not a speedy defensive back. And there have been some tremendous times at the combine over the last 4 or 5 years in terms of cornerbacks. A lot of 4.2s, a lot of 4.3s. I keep a list, by the way. Not for those of you who don't know, I am also the owner of gridironstuds.com, and on my blog there, for it's been over 10 years now, I've been keeping a list of the fastest 40-yard dash times in history. And it's called the fastest 40-yard dash ever. And that list just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. The list starts with way back in the day with Darryl Green. Fastest 40, on there, Bo Jackson, who was a 4.12 guy, But that list keeps getting bigger and bigger every year. I'm adding guys onto it every year, and you don't get on that list unless you ran a sub 4.340. And this list is getting huge. It's going to hit 100 soon. So that's some serious speed that's out there. I'm going to go back on something that I talked about last week. As I, you know, a good portion of the show, I was discussing Asante Samuel Sr. and his back and forth that he was having with Sauce Gardner, and how he sees some similarity between how the New York media is pubbing up Sauce Gardner in much of the same way that they pubbed up Darrelle Revis during his playing days, which happened to coincide with Asante Samuel Sr.'s playing days. And, you know, I don't want to rehash last week's show in its entirety. If you guys want to hear that discussion, you feel free to go back and listen to episode 5, which was last week. I got into that some. But one of the big points that was made by Asante Samuel in comparing himself to Darrelle Revis was the amount of interceptions. And he was saying, you know, how do you get into the Hall of Fame with only 29 interceptions, which is what Darrelle Revis has in his career? And how is Asante Samuel Sr. not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame when he's got almost twice as many at 51, with six pick sixes to go along with that? I don't have an answer for that. The Hall of Fame has been rather curious on certain guys. I would like to know why Darren Woodson, former Cowboy, is not in the Hall of Fame, but John Lynch is. John Lynch deserves to be there. But on that same token, why isn't Darren Woodson? Darrelle Revis certainly deserves to be there. An elite corner in this game of all time. So certainly a guy that should be wearing a gold jacket. But what are the parameters and reasons that you are keeping Asante Samuel Sr. out? He has the numbers. He has a ring. You know, at this point, it just seems like a personal thing because he's gone after certain people. He's outspoken. He's very much a Florida guy, a South Florida guy. All right, I do have to separate that. South Florida is a country, is a city, a state, let me say, of its own. There's South Florida and then there's regular Florida. All right, there's Florida on steroids, which is South Florida, and that's Palm Beach down all the way into the drink going towards Cuba, and then there's everything above that. And folks, if you've lived down here, been down here, spent any amount of time down here, you know that's two totally different places. I could explain it to you, but as they say, I could show you better than I could tell you. So come on down, spend a little time around Disney, Orlando, maybe in the Tallahassee, Gainesville area, and then with the rest of the time that you have, get in the car, head down 95 or 75 south, and enter South Florida, and you're going to realize it's a totally whole nother state. So anyway, Asante Samuels is a South Florida guy. He's going to talk, and sometimes that talk's going to be crazy, and maybe that has pissed some people off, but this is not about that. You did that with Terrell Owens, and it turned into a little bit of a catastrophe because you tried to keep a guy out of the Hall of Fame when he certainly belonged there. He should have been first ballot. And now you're prolonging this whole thing with Asante Samuel. And Asante Samuel's not going to, he's not going to stop, folks. He's going to speak his mind. You're not stopping him from doing that. It's one thing that I know. You're not stopping him from doing that. But anyway, his point was interceptions versus pass breakups. And I'm bringing that question to you guys that are listening here. When it comes to your defensive backs, in particular, your cornerbacks, what means more to you? Interceptions or pass breakups? And by pass breakups, I mean, let me not just say pass breakups. Do you like the guy that gets the turnovers like an Asante Samuel? Or do you want a guy that completely shuts down a wide receiver, another team's top wide receiver, and holds him to two or three catches and keeps him out of the end zone? Where do you go with? I'm a guy that's partial to interceptions. All right, having coached for a while, I understand that turnovers win you ball games. Okay, getting extra possessions for your offense, especially in this day and age with what offenses are able to do by way of their increased schematics as well as the rules of the game, getting your team an extra two or three possessions each game equates into wins. I say that, though, knowing full well that taking a top wide receiver, though, out of a game can equal victories for you as well. If you come into a game and you hold Devontae Adams to three or four receptions, when he was with Green Bay or now that he's with the Raiders, you're probably beating those teams. You're probably going to beat those teams. You hold Stephon Diggs to 3 or 4 catches for 35, 40 yards, which is the kind of stuff that Revis was doing, you have a really good chance of winning the game. So what do you prefer? All right, and I think I'm going to have this as a question set up on the show, on the podcasters. If you're listening to this on Podcasters for Spotify, which is where most of my audience comes from, check out the interaction tab. I'm going to have that question there. You guys feel free to answer that. Or you can send me an email to cwilson. Or you can send me an email to cwilson@allisdbcamp.com and give me your answer on that right there. Do you prefer the interceptions or the PBUs? I'm a little more to the interceptions, all right? I'm that, you know, I like the Rod Woodsons of the world. I like the Ed Reeds of the world, or Charles Woodsons of the world that would turn the ball over, all right? And for any of you out there that think Deion Sanders falls more into the mold of a Darrelle Revis, I'm here to tell you, you might want to do a little bit of research. Deion had 53 career interceptions. So he was Darrelle Revis, and he was Asante Samuel, all right? He'd lock down your top guy, and if you dared to throw the ball over there for some strange reason, he's going to intercept the ball, and he's going to take it back the other way. That's why many people consider him the GOAT. For most of the people out there that were of an age of consciousness that saw Deion Sanders play and then also saw Darrelle Revis play, they are certainly, majority of those guys going to be calling Deion the GOAT. This new era, this new generation of guys, they fall more to Darrelle Revis because that's what they saw, and he had a, you know, definitely had an impressive run. When you can shut down guys like Megatron and you can hold your own against a Randy Moss and do well against Terrell Owens and all the other great receivers that he went up against and held in check, Chad Johnson, then, you know, you deserve that credit. And so for this younger generation that didn't really see Deion, he's more of a, you know, you might see a clip here or there on YouTube. It's very difficult. It'd be like, you know, guys maybe from my generation trying to say, you know, turn around and say Mel Blount is better than Deion Sanders. I mean, I saw the tail end of Mel Blount's career. It was definitely impressive. But would I say him over Deion Sanders? No. But I didn't see the meat and potatoes of Mel Blount's career. So I totally get it when the younger generation says Darrelle Revis is that guy. But what do you guys prefer, interceptions or PBUs? I'm on record for saying I lean slightly more to those interceptions, knowing full well, though, having both types of cornerbacks can certainly increase your chance to win football games. I just like those interceptions. Here's the thing about interceptions over pass breakups. You can take an interception and run that puppy in for a touchdown. You don't even have to. You don't even have to give that ball back to your offense. Pick sixes. That's the most exciting thing in the game for me. So, I'm just going to lean slightly towards that. But a tremendous amount of respect for Darrelle Revis's career in that era. I'm going to venture. I can solidly say he was the best of that era. No disrespect to a Richard Sherman or Asante Samuel or any other guys that feel like they're in that category. I felt like Revis stood alone. And it was not just a being a New York Jet thing. He went to Tampa, did that same thing in a totally different system. Went to the Patriots and had one of his better years. Got a ring out of it and, you know, had a nice long career. And went up against a lot of top guys and held them in check. So, tremendous amount of respect for that. But I lean a little bit more to the interceptions. All right, time for our mailbag before we get into our main topic, which again is three things you must remember in the game as a defensive back. I am going to grab this one. M Larkin_19 from Instagram asked me this question. Coach, do you have any tips on helping our safeties play corner routes from the smash concept in cover 2? Our alignments are 10 yards, aligned a man off the last man on the line of scrimmage. We currently weave in our pedal to inside leverage of number 2, then we're reading 2-1 in coverage assignment. I'm not sure if he wrote that right. Perhaps what he meant was weave to inside leverage of number 1. Because I can't imagine playing playing cover 2 and weaving inside as a safety. starting on, you know, maybe off the hash or outside of the, you know, the framework, outside of the offense, according to the, what he said is their alignment. I can't imagine you being on the outside edges of the offensive line in your alignment and then weaving to the middle. So I'm going to assume he made a little bit of an error there. You know, when he hears this, he could perhaps correct that. Okay, first thing that I'm going to say here is I see a problem with your alignment of your safeties. They can't be at 10 yards unless you're playing some kind of youth football. But if you're at a high school level and above, 10 yards is just not going to get it done. You're asking for the ball to go over your guys' head, either on, you know, nine routes, seam routes, and of course cover, you know, corner routes are going to be hard to cover from there because your safeties are going to end up with their backs turned. Here's my thoughts on cover two. First of all, there's two ways you can go about playing this thing. There's a Tampa two where your corners are going to sit harder in the flat because your safeties are going to weave over the top. Kind of, you know, they're going to weave off of the hash and get out to the numbers. They're going to get to the sidelines a little bit more. They're able to do that because the middle linebacker, the Mike linebacker in Tampa 2, is running deep down the middle of the field. So when all is said and done, it ends up being a three deep. I don't think people sometimes realize that about Tampa 2. It's called Tampa 2. When things are done right and the middle linebacker runs down that middle of the field the way that he's supposed to, you end up with three guys deep. And because there is that middle linebacker in the post eventually, that does allow you to weave yourself off of the hash as a safety and be over the top. And if that's what you're doing, it should be extremely difficult for a team to hit a corner ball in a smash concept against your safeties because they're going to be essentially running to that area of the field. They're going to be weaving off of the hash to that area of the field. And again, 10 yards is not going to get it done. 15 yards. Here's another thing I tend to do with cover two. Have your safeties deeper rather than shorter. It's a two deep coverage. 15 yards, in my mind, is a minimum at the high school level. And depending on the kind of quarterback and the strength he has in his arm and the type of throws that they like to make, you could even push that number back to 18, even 20. Deeper is better with your safeties in cover two. Whether you're playing a Tampa two or you're playing a, you know, a more traditional cover two where your safeties are going to get depth on the hash and stay on that hash until a throw or the loss of a threat brings them off that hash, and I'll discuss what a loss of a threat is. But be at 15, get depth on the hash, and your corners now are going to get their reroutes on number one. They're going to read number two, and if number two is up, meaning he's pushing down the field vertically, then your corners sink back. They sink back, and they're going to be able to help a safety on the corner ball in a smash concept. They're going to sink back if number two is getting up the field, and they're going to be underneath a corner route, and the safety is going to be over the top. The corner being underneath that corner route as he bails back, for lack of a better term, is going to force that quarterback to put air in the ball. He can't make a line drive throw because that corner's right there and would have the ability to jump up and knock it down or intercept it. So now he's got to put air in the ball. And when you're putting air on the ball, that's going to give your safety more time to get to that corner ball over the top and make a play on it. So you're kind of sandwiching the corner ball in that traditional cover two. That's not Tampa. That is not where you have your mic automatically running down the middle of the field. There are a number of ways that you can play the mic in your traditional cover two, but it's not Tampa two where that mic linebacker sprints back to the middle of the field. All right, I realize I'm doing this on a podcast. It's not the greatest radio to be trying to explain this to you, so I'm doing my best to explain it to you in a way that you can visualize it. So either way, whether you're playing that traditional cover two or a Tampa two, start lining your guys up at 15 yards. It's best to keep the routes in front of you. And one of the big things that I stress to my safeties when I was coaching and I was a defensive coordinator is you have to keep those routes in front of you as a safety. And that means Keep them in your peripheral vision. If you're lined up too shallow and you don't get your depth on the hash as those routes push down the field, they're going to get too much on top of you. Those wide receivers are going to start getting even with you, and now you cannot either feel or see those routes out, you know, with your peripheral vision. And what's going to happen is it's going to force your safeties to make a commitment to one or the other. So I want you to imagine, number one, running a go route, number two, running a seam route, and your safety being in the middle of that, and the routes are getting even and on top of him. At some point, he is going to feel the pressure now to have to turn to one guy or the other. And all that quarterback is doing is reading that safety, and if he commits to the seam ball, he's going to go ahead and throw that ball to the go route outside. If the safety commits to that go route outside, then that quarterback is going to go ahead and make that throw to the seam. And what you want to do is be able to keep that safety in his pedal comfortably with those both of those routes underneath him for as long as possible. You don't want him to have to commit his shoulders and have to run to one guy or the other. You want him to be able to stay in that pedal. And when that quarterback reaches the top of his drop and he's ready to throw, he's looking at a safety that's squared up, not a guy with his shoulders turned facing one route or the other. That's frightening for a quarterback. And this is all happening while he's getting pressured by a rush, because hopefully you have a good rush with three or four guys to put pressure on that quarterback and force him to make a decision. You just don't want a quarterback sitting back there all day. So the first thing I would say is you want to get your guys back 15 yards and stress to them to get depth. Okay. Believe it or not, if the underneath guys do their job well, there's not going to be as much space behind the underneath coverage and in front of those safeties if you put them at 15 and they get depth. The way most, you know, route concepts work and the way most offenses attack you is they'll push the routes down the field. Now, will they curl a guy up in a flat somewhere, or will they run a guy shallow across the field? Yes. And if you're a good defense that runs to the ball and plays good defense in general, then you want to force more of those throws. You want to force the little shallow route throws. You want to force the hitch routes. You want to force the swing routes to be thrown. And your defense goes and runs and rallies to that and holds it to a minimal gain. What you don't want are routes getting even with your safeties when they're supposed to be the deepest. You don't want corner routes being run and your safeties are opening and having to run backwards to defend a corner route, because that puts them in a they're not in a best position there. They're running backwards. They're kind of halfway trying to look back at the quarterback, trying to judge where the wide receiver is, and they're not going to be in the best physical position to make a play on the ball. Now, if they're 15 yards deep and they're getting depth and that corner route breaks off, most times a receiver seeing a safety that deep will try to flatten out some. And again, if you're playing a traditional cover two, corner should be underneath that, should be able to put air on it. And at worst, your safety should be going to the side. They should be running towards the sideline, straight towards that sideline to go make that play. Or even better, slightly coming downhill to go defend that corner ball. What you don't want is them having to turn their backs completely to the quarterback, run backwards, and then look over their shoulder as they're running down the field to try and make a play on the ball. So figure out what kind of cover two you guys want to run, whether it's Tampa 2, where your guys can weave off of the hash and be over number one quicker than normal with a Mike linebacker running down the middle of the field. Or do you want to play a traditional cover two where your safeties get depth on the hash, your corners reroute, and they're trying to reroute guys inside, and if two is up the field, they sink back to help on corner routes or go routes if everyone's going up the field. Decide which one of those you want to be, which one's going to really help your team, which is best for your team. Either way, though, the minimum you want to have your guys lined up at is 15 yards. 15, and you may find that you might want to get deeper than that. The whole thing with cover two is let's try to force those underneath throws. Let's try and force the quarterback to try and fit the ball into tighter windows because there's five guys underneath instead of dropping those bombs on the two safeties that are back there. They're deep. They're the last line of defense. Let's keep them back there and let's have them keep the routes in front of us. So mail in _MLarkin_19 MLarkin_19. I hope that answered the question for you. I've got time for one more quick question, and that is about watching film, something that I get more and more, especially around this time of year. Shamar in Illinois is asking me, I'm a sophomore defensive back, and I want to watch film to get better, but I'm not sure what I should be watching. Do you have any tips? All right, Shamar, I'm not sure you're going to be in love with this answer. This, what you're asking me, is probably a topic for a show. It requires more than just a little small 5 minutes of mailbag time. I'm going to say this to you, and first I'm going to say that's going to be a topic of a show coming up down the road. Exactly when, I don't know. And for that reason, I've pulled your question to give you somewhat of an answer here that can help you. But that will be a topic of a future show down the road, hopefully in the near future. Could be before the season or when the season starts. Sometimes when the season starts and people have a whole lot more interest in this topic, once the season starts, a bullet starts flying and, you know, they start having a little bit of a problem out there. I can't assure you or give you a date or time when that complete show about that is going to happen. So in the interim, I will say this to you, and I'm talking to all of our high school football players out there and maybe some coaches, you might want to throw this your guys way. If you guys this summer, with whatever time you've got left before you start getting into playing games, took a film from your biggest rival, okay, your biggest game that's coming up this year, and you took their best game, or maybe you guys played them last year and won or lost or whatever, and you watched that film every single day this summer. If you just pulled it out and watched it for about 15, 20 minutes every day, same film, over and over and over again, you could learn, a lot about that team, the best team in your conference, your rival, and then you'll learn a lot about offense. And here's what you're going to do. Because each time you watch that film, you're going to notice something new. All right, that's why I encourage guys to pick film each week, the best film each week. And yes, I want you to watch as many different games as possible, as time will allow. But pick a couple of games. If you're an avid watcher, 3, maybe 4 games, and you watch them more than once, because each time you watch the film, you're going to notice something different. But while you are watching that film, you start asking yourself questions. Why is the running back 7 yards deep on this play, but on the other play, he was 6 or 5 yards deep? Why in shotgun was the running back deeper than the quarterback on one play? He was even with the quarterback on another play. And on this particular play, he's slightly ahead of the quarterback. What does that mean? You start asking those questions. When you get those answers, you jot them down. Why is the tight end right next to the tackle on this play? And then on another play, he split out wide and he's in the slot. Or maybe on another play, he singled up backside and they've got trips to the other side. Ask yourself those questions. When it comes to personnel, why is their top wide receiver, who's normally lined up on the line of scrimmage, perhaps by himself, he's lined up by himself, why is he suddenly now in the slot in the trips formation? Why is he lined up at number 3 in the trips formation? Why is he on the ball and the other two guys are off the ball on this particular play? And if you keep going through that same film and you ask those questions over and over and you start getting the answers, again, you'll learn something about that top rival's team and their offense, and you'll start learning something about offense in general. Because a lot of these offenses do the same stuff. If you're in high school, yeah, there's a lot more multiplicity, I would say, that happens. Because there's all different types of offenses. There's bear offenses. There's wing T offenses. There's spread offenses. Because there's more schools, there's different regions where, you know, people try to craft offenses that fit what it is they have for talent in that area. There's multiple things. However, when you do what it is I'm telling you, you tend to learn something about offense. And then sometimes even when you go watch an offense that's totally different, you watch a spread offense, and then now you're watching an option offense, you're going to start to realize there's some similarities in those two offenses. They're all born out of the same thing. But you watch that same offense over and over, Shamar, and you ask those questions, and you keep watching it, and you notice things different. Keep noticing different things here and there, and you ask questions, and you get answers. Don't just see stuff that you don't understand and not ask yourself a question and try to get an answer. You're dissecting it. I used to try and tell my guys, it's kind of like you're a medical examiner. You're a coroner. And what coroners do is, a body comes into the morgue. Someone has died. It might be an obvious homicide, whatever. That coroner is going to examine the body and he's going to ask questions. He's going to be looking for certain things and he's going to ask questions. Why are there marks around the neck? What's going on with the fingernails? Obviously, why is there a hole here? And if there's a hole in this part of the body, is there an exit wound? They start asking questions. This is what you're going to do with an offense. You're going to watch it on film and you just, the more you start asking questions, the more you start looking for answers, the more you start observing. When you're looking for answers, you're observing more. And this now, when I get into a full show on talking to you about, what you actually need to look for in film, you're going to kind of be ahead of the game because you're going to, on your own, kind of notice some of the things that you need to be looking out for. Why? Because you ask questions and now you're looking for answers. You're fishing around for answers and you're just going to start noticing things. And a lot of the stuff you notice by watching that one film over and over and over, you're going to start watching other games. Maybe you watch games on TV just for fun, but now you're not going to just watch the games to see who has the great dope cleats on and who has the awesome visor on and whose drip looks great. You're going to start watching it with a more keen eye for the strategy because you've noticed that top high school team that you've been watching all summer do some of the same things you're seeing that NFL team do or that college football team do or maybe that other high school team do, and you're going to start noticing there's a lot of similarities there, and there's reasons why they have to do this. There's reasons why that tight end split out. There's reasons why that back is deeper than the quarterback. There's a reason why that running back is at 7 yards on certain plays, and then in other plays he's at 6 yards. There's a reason why the fullback is offset on this play and he's directly behind the quarterback on another play. Just watch that same film over and over again. All right, Shamar, sorry this isn't the more in-depth, detailed answer that maybe you were looking for, or maybe this helps. I know this is going to help you, but that's, like I said, is say for a later show. Take what I just gave you right here and run with it. Watch your rival's film, the best game they played last year or the game that they played against you, and watch that over and over and over. Devote 10, 15, maybe even 20 minutes to it each day for the rest of this summer and watch how much you start learning about football and you subliminally pick up some things that you need to find when you're watching offenses play. All right? All righty. Moving on to our main topic. And the main topic that we're going with today is three things that a defensive back needs to remember when he's playing the game. And so why do I have this topic, first of all? I remember being a young defensive back playing in high school, and there's always talk, it came from the offensive side of the ball, all right? So on the offensive side of the ball to begin this thing, I was a running back when I first started playing football. I came into this game as an offensive player and, played a little bit of wide receiver, played running back, came from that side of the ball. And so a big thing for us on the offensive side of the ball is the down and distance, right? That's going to determine what play I call, all right? It just makes sense. We're trying to get first downs, and so we need to know how many yards we need to make to get to the sticks. So knowing the down and distance was just second nature. I do remember going over, though, to the defensive side of the ball, and there were so many things swirling around in my head now. What's the coverage? Where am I supposed to be in this coverage? What are some of the things that I need to look out for from the offense? Where do I fit on a run play? Where do I fit on this coverage? That I started to find that there was a lot of times in the game where I was missing out on very obvious things that I would need to know if I was trying to be really, really good at this. And through experience, because, I didn't really have someone to make these things clear to me. There was no Indie Drills podcast when I was growing up. There weren't podcasts at all when I started playing this game. And so I had to kind of find these things out on my own. And as I found out these things on my own, the way that I was able to anticipate and make plays on the field grew dramatically. Dramatically. And so now this wasn't a physical thing. All right? This wasn't, a dramatic improvement because, you know, my bench went up 50 points or I cut a, you know, a tenth or two off my 40 time. I mean, I'm sure that contributed because I was growing and getting faster and all that. But I was able to determine that just knowing these three things that I'm about to tell you dramatically increased my ability to be around the football, anticipate plays, and make really, really big plays. And so I'm bringing that to you today. All right. The first thing, and this seems rather simple, but if you've played this game, you know there are many, many times when you're out there and you don't know this. And number one is the down and distance. Seems simple enough, but you'll be surprised how many times guys will be on the field and forget this. And I'm not just talking about youth and high school football players either. This will also happen to guys playing in the pro game. I've talked to them about this. Sometimes you lose sight of that. You forget about it. You know, like I said, there's a lot of things going on in your head, and you may forget that. Whatever level you're playing at, though, you must make it a point to remember this important element. The plays run by the offense, like I said, are dictated by the down and distance. It's that simple. With that in mind, it stands to reason that knowing the down and distance can help you determine what may be coming. And again, we're talking about anticipation. Of course, mastering this is going to require some effort from you in practice. And for you coaches out there, you're doing a disservice to your defenders if you do not put some emphasis on down and distance when you're running scout team plays against them. Don't just run plays just to run them. Down and distance before they run that play. You've got to start prepping your players for that so they can have some anticipation when they're out there. For my players out there, when you're in 7-on-7 or you're in your team periods, make it a point to remember to know the down and distance. If you've got a team that's keen on that and they're speaking it and they're saying it out, you're hearing the offense say what the down and distance is, make a note of it and start getting yourself in the mode of knowing the down and distance. I'm speaking from experience on this. It'll translate into a better game day performance. Trust me on that one. Number two is know where you are on the field. And by this, I mean pay attention to and be aware of what yard line the offense is on. For a majority of teams that you're playing against, where they are located on the field is going to determine the plays that will be run. A team backed up against their own end zone will have a different set of plays they'll run versus that very same team with the ball near midfield. They tend to get a little more courage around midfield. Similarly, there are different plays run from midfield than those that are run in the red zone. So you've got to be aware of where you are on the field. Offensive coaches' mindset will change as they progress down the field or get pushed backwards towards their own goal. Being aware of where you are in the field can help you make a more accurate prediction of what may be coming your way. All right, you see that big menu type thing they're holding? It looks like a Waffle House menu. The offensive coach and usually the head coach is holding there in front of them. I can guarantee you if that whole thing is not broken down on location on the field, a good part of that play sheet that they have in their hand is color-coded for where they are located on the field and the set of plays that are available to them to run in those different locations. And so if it's important to those offensive coaches, man, it's damn well better be important to you. So start paying attention to where you are located on the field. And then the final part is know who's in the game. Players dictate plays. Some teams engage in this practice more than others, but almost all teams run plays based on the personnel. Okay, you bring two tight ends in the game, that's different plays being run versus four wide receivers out there. So even teams that don't switch guys out very often will run plays according to where certain players are located, where they line up. Once you get more comfortable in your skin out on the field and you're able to narrow your focus, one of the things you're going to need to take note of is who's in the field, who's on the field right now for the offense. Teams will change backs and run only certain plays with certain running backs in there. How would it be nice to really cut down, you know, what may be coming your way in terms of anticipation just by a different running back being in a game. Some teams will have a guy that's the screen running back or the guy that's going to be in the backfield and he's going to go out for passes. There won't be a whole lot of running with him. There won't be a whole lot of power run plays. And you can narrow things down. Or, you know, there's a guy that comes in and he's the running back. He's the one that's going to run in between the tackles. And so the pass plays you're going to get out of that are play action. And you could be ready for that just by knowing who's in the game. Some teams will run the ball more when certain receivers are in the game. Man, one of the hacks I used to have is some teams would roll out little young wide receivers out there that had maybe one or two catches for the season. They'd bring those two guys in. They'd get the two top guys off the field to give them a breather. And when those two guys were in, it's a run play. So the big dogs who run all the routes and run down the field can catch a breather. And, you know, I knew it. And I could get ready for certain run plays. And maybe, you know, I'm in cover two and I can attack off the edge. Just, you know, be in a position to make a play. And then when the big dogs came in, I knew I better be ready for a pass play here. So just knowing who's on the field and how that matches up with the plays are going to be run will help you make a prediction of what's coming your way. And again, being able to make those predictions, it allows you to have that anticipation. And man, a lot of times you need that anticipation to make a play. Majority of your plays, I'm not saying an overwhelming majority, a majority of your plays are going to come from anticipation. The rest will just be coming from reactions. This is a very reactive position that you're playing. But I'm here to tell you, a majority of your big-time plays are going to come from anticipation of what is coming. And the way to do that is to know these three things on the field. So to summarize, number one, know the down and distance. Stop forgetting the down and distance. Stop feeling like that's not an important part of the game. Know the down and distance each and every time. That starts with you in practice making it a point to know. Number two, know where you're located on the field. All right, make a note of it. Don't be lined up in the middle of the field, not really paying attention, and that's where the offense likes to throw the deep ball, throw the bomb to the end zone, and you're just not aware because you're not paying attention. You're too caught up in all kinds of other things. So know where you are on the field. And then the final thing is know who's in the game. Now, granted, that usually comes when you get really, really comfortable, but if you can pick that up sooner rather than later, it's going to help you. Is that the screen running back that's in the game? Is that the pass down running back? Are there two tight ends in the game? What does that mean? Are there four wide receivers now in the game? What does that mean? Are these the backup wide receivers in the game? What does that mean? Are these the big dog wide receivers in the game? What does that mean? It all stems back to what I was saying when I was talking about answering Shamar in Illinois' question about just observing the game. Ask yourself questions. Get yourself some answers. You figure things out. You can anticipate. And now you're a baller. All right. All right. That's going to wrap the show up for today. I hope you guys found some value in what it is I was talking about. It's a DB podcast. So I feel pretty good that you did. And again, going to continue to bring these to you. I will probably take a break sometime in August. Got to get away with the fam. It's been a long, hard summer of training with guys in high school and college and NFL guys. And me and the missus are going to take a break. So we might miss a couple of weeks there. But, hey, you know what? While I'm gone, if I don't have anything here for you, man, go ahead and listen to some of those old, some of the older episodes. All right? Because the good thing about the Indie Drills podcast is it's not just about current events. It's about stuff that you can use. So, you know what? Just like I told you, you watch some of the games over and over and over, you can re-listen to a podcast. And maybe you pick up something in what I said that you missed the first time. So go ahead and jump on those. Either way, though, if you've not done it yet, go ahead and hit the subscribe button so you don't miss the next podcast. And then you can easily come back and find those old episodes, man, when you want to brush up on some nugget that I've thrown out there for you. Also, don't forget to hit the interact button if you're using podcasters for Spotify. Get an answer to a question that I have associated with this podcast, with this episode. Love to get you guys feedback. If you want to ask me a question and have me read it out on the show, or just, you know, answer back for you, send me an email to cwilson@alleyesdbcamp.com, or you can check me out on Instagram and send me a DM there @alleyesdbcamp. And of course, once again, I want to pub that book, 101 DB Tips ebook, 101 of the best DB tips you're ever going to get. And I feel comfortable saying that. 20 plus years of experience coaching and playing this game put in there. And guys, I have played with some of the best, I've coached some of the best, and I'm training some of the best right now. So this is a great source of information. If you're trying to be really, really good at this DB thing, you got a source there, and this book really helps you there. So hit it, 101dbtips.com. Go check it out. Make that purchase. All right, I'm out of here, guys. That's enough from me. And until next time, guys, thanks for listening to the Indie Drills podcast.